Well, it's been a few years, but Cindy Dale is back with us on Coast to Coast as we will talk about chakras and subtle energy and so much more in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Cindy Dale with us. Cindy, of course, is an author on energy healing and spirituality, believing and teaching that subtle energy can enhance your life. Cindy has seen over 35,000 clients, demonstrates how subtle energy can affect your relationships, health, career, and just about everything. How true that is, Cindy, and welcome back.
Hi, it's so nice to be on again.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this. And tell me a little bit about the subtle energy techniques. I like that.
Well, I know. Isn't that fantastic? That's one of my newer books, Subtle Energy Techniques, is first in a series that Llewellyn is putting out. You know, I've been doing healing for about 25 years, and I was really fortunate to be trained in a lot of different countries, Peru, Costa Rica, Morocco, you know, with indigenous healers, with people who were, you know, living with the people with whom they were working, talking to the plants, you could even say, that were helping to perform the healing. And, you know, working with thousands of clients, I acquired quite a toolkit, George, you know, lots of different ways to approach an issue, a problem, health issues, relationship issues, career issues. And I thought, you know, all of this needs to be simplified because, you know, we're mystical beings and we're having really everyday experiences. I don't know about you, but I have to clean my house every so often and walk the dogs. And
yeah, I just let all the dirt pile
yeah,
up.
I hire all my help, right? And I thought, why don't we put all the simple techniques together that are really the most powerful? And that's what this particular book is about. You know, it makes really accessible, you know, everything that, you know, kind of accomplishes grand things so we can use that information in our everyday life. So it's sort of, you could say it's sort of the best of what I've been learning and what I've been utilizing and teaching, and other people have been teaching me as well.
Now, this energy, this subtle energy, where does it come from?
It is. You know, some people would say that it emanated from before the pre-bang. Some people would say that it is the same as the energy like dark matter or quantum energy, you know, that's everywhere at once. And I really personally equate it with quantum energy. I mean, in general, everything's energy. Einstein said it. You know, he's certainly not going to roll over in his grave if we talk about subtle energy, because that's what he was trying to prove and figure out how it worked. You know, so everything's energy, which is really just energy, you know, is information that moves. So the idea behind even studying energy is that if you alter information, say the information creating a problem or a challenge, you can change the strictures, you can change the structures that are keeping the problem in place. If you alter movement or vibration, you can do the same thing. And of course, you can do both at once as well. But there's physical energy, which, you know all that means is it's measurable energy. Subtle energy is really the immeasurable, the quantum, the stuff that moves faster or slower than what we know how to measure. It can move faster than the speed of light. It can move so slow that you're going to get those sort of Eastern sort of experiences, you know, kind of like they're in the movies, you know, when literally time stands still, you can watch everything happen, the bullet stops, you can get out of the way. That's what subtle energy is about. It's about directing just plain information or vibration with your consciousness so that you can create the kind of effects that are supposed to be created, you know, or that are more desirable rather than negative.
Are we born with the ability to tap into the subtle energy, or is it with us all the time?
It's always with us. But, you know, when we're kids, I think we're more apt, you know, to be able to see it, to sense it. When I was a kid, I saw and heard things my parents thought were sort of crazy. I remember waking up when I was 4 years old, and I could see these shadows on a hallway, and I heard bacon sizzling, you know, at like midnight. Went into the kitchen. There was nobody
no
there.
Bacon. And you didn't smell it, right?
No, I didn't smell it, but I heard it. And I heard these hobos talking. I lived in Huntsville, Alabama, and we had a railroad behind us.
Hobos.
And I thought they just came in. You know, the hobos came in, cooked breakfast. And I was sure that my mother was going to be really mad because there were, you know, frying pans and dishes in the sink. And there wasn't anything. But I heard them, and I saw the shadows, and I woke my parents, and I got in trouble. You know, so I think a lot of kids are just naturally more open and aware. You know, and what's kind of interesting about that, too, is there's a way of understanding called synesthesia, where you can smell what you see, colors have a sound, and there's some recent research that's suggesting that up until about age 2, kids have that. Like, everything's sort of blurred, and we don't really particularize, you know, between ways of knowing. And then we sort of fall in line, and we want to be sensory and normal and this and that. But I personally think that's really an early kind of a vestigial ability, you know, of being able to sense, to see, to feel, to hear this subtle energy. And, you know, a lot of my clients, I've worked with lots of people, you know, students talk about how, you know, expect until maybe about age 8, 10, something like that, you know, they could hear voices in the night. They knew there was some kind of spirit at the end of the bed. They knew what their aunt pet was saying.
Sure.
Mine are always saying food, 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 so it's sort of easy in my household. You know, but we just sort of forget or go with the tribal mentality. But, you know, we can relearn it. Once you have something, you can relearn it.
How do the chakras fit into this?
Well, chakras are what they call subtle energy centers or organs. I think it's amazing. When I started my work 25 years ago, very few people knew what they were. But now it's sort of the norm out there to go, oh, chakra this and chakra that, or how's your chakras today?
How did we discover them?
Well, the ancients did. They've been around in most cultures. We've known about them for thousands of years. And I believe thousands of years ago, our ancestors used their paranormal senses. They could see and perceive and feel and hear subtle energies. And so they knew that we had more than just the liver or the gallbladder. We had these subtle energy centers that emanated from the front side and the back side of the body and interconnected us to the subtle universe, to the realms. I call them imaginal realms, based on Arabic mysticism. And they're tools for opening doorways between the realms. We sort of rediscovered them, I think, a little bit, especially in the West, in the early 1900s, when Sir Arthur Avalon or John Woodrow, if he had a couple names, a couple aliases, you know, wrote a book that made it big in the West that recapped Hindu knowledge about the chakras. And it's interesting that when his book came out, it's called Serpent Power, you know, he suggested actually there were 6 chakras, and people added the top one on the head, the crown, mm-hmm. to his, you know, kind of list, and decided there are 7 chakras.
Is any one of them more important than the other?
No. You know, we need them all. I divide them into groupings. I really believe there's sort of lower body chakras, middle body chakras, higher, and we have to utilize them all. In general, the lower ones are the densest. The middle are more psychological, the higher are more spiritual. But, you know, you can't get anything done without the dense chakras. I'm sorry. You're not going to make a living. You're not going to be able to walk. You're not going to be able to do what needs to be done in this world. And we all know the power of beliefs in psychology. Those middle chakras are humming along, you know, helping us with our feelings and our beliefs and changing our feelings and beliefs. And then the spiritual ones are typically considered those that are attuning us, enlightening us, giving us that sense of connection and breadth and depth. We have to use them all. Our world in general tends to shy away from the lower chakras. We like what's called the first chakra in the hip because it helps us make money. But you've really got to do more than that. You need to be connected.
Is that where some of the, you know, let's say the ancient Chinese used acupuncture on chakra points? Is that what they do?
Well, they actually did, yes. And they use acupoints are sort of like sub-aspects of the chakra regions. Acupoints also get connected into the meridians. There's 3 basic sort of invisible structures that make up this subtle anatomy. You know, there's three parts of our anatomy. It's called the subtle energy anatomy that organize the subtle energy that we can direct energy through. So there's the chakras, which are the organs. There's the meridians or channels. They're called nadis in Hindu, that flow through the connective tissue. And then there's the energetic fields. Most people, when they use that term, are talking about the auric fields that are actually extensions of the chakras. So you think about those aspects of ourself, and that is the system that's managing our subtle selves.
It's amazing work that you've been doing, Cindy. And you've been doing it for how long now?
Oh, my gosh, 25 or 30 years. I should really count the 10 years before that I was a kid. We might add a few years to that.
That's where you got some of your experience?
Yeah, I saw energies. I saw colors. I could feel and see that, you know, kind of what was pulsing in the earth. I could, I think a lot of kids do that. I could literally talk to fairies, you know, and I knew that we resonated if we allowed ourselves with the universe, with spirit, with grass, with, with everything that's alive. It's all connected. And the subtle energy world is what explains how that works.
Let's talk about evil for a moment, if we can.
Let's talk about evil.
Where does evil fit into this? Low-level energy?
It's low-level. You know, I always think of evil with a big X in my mind, all right? You know, evil is that which seeks to manipulate and to destroy, really consciously. And I do believe that there are beings, that there are souls that want to just plain have power and run others. And sort of annihilate love would be a way to say it. And, you know, I've actually worked with probably 65,000 clients at this point. Different books have different numbers, and, you know, it changes over time. And goes up, not down. But, you know, I have to say that maybe I see 30 clients a week or some such thing, probably at least 15, I'm working with some kind of forces. I would call at least dark, if not evil, in that they seek to temper goodness, destroy goodness, or steal energy from people because they don't want to go to good sources. They don't want to go to the source or God or divine, spirit, whatever word we want to use, you know, for their sustenance. So if you're not going to go to the well for what you need, you still need energy. I mean, whether you're dead or alive, whether you're in the subtle realms or the physical realm, you need energy to survive. It's just a different sort of vibration of energy that you're seeking.
If you're sick,
yes,
and you don't have that energy,
yes,
is that indicative of some energy loss within the body?
Absolutely. Energy loss within the body. There's really two mechanisms that, if I'm going to make it simple to explain illness or mental challenges, A, you're losing your own energy. It could be from any chakra at any level, dense, psychological, spiritual, or all, and or you're taking on energies that are not your own. And you can't process an energy that's not your own. So it's going to create an inflammatory condition in the body. So at really a basic level, this new word that everybody's using, medicine, energy medicine, is really about figuring out where there's a loss of energy that you're supposed to keep and use, or you're taking on energies that are not your own and you can't process it, so you're creating the conditions for microbial infections, mental challenges, emotional issues, etc.
Does having subtle energy help your telepathy?
It is the basis of telepathy. And, you know, there's really four types of telepathy. People always think of telepathy as hearing others' thoughts. And I've done that a few times. It's sort of a spooky phenomenon, to be honest. You know, but we're really, you know, we have empathic gifts, meaning we can sense and feel what's mm-hmm. going on outside of ourselves. There's primal telepathy, where you get an instinct about safety or lack thereof. There's feeling telepathy, where you can kind of translate, you know, into knowledge or words, you know, what's going on with others' feelings or your own. There's mental telepathy, which is really mind-to-mind communication, you know, and there's spiritual telepathy as well, where you can get kind of a sense of what the divine is really thinking and word that or put that into communiques for yourself or for other people. But it's all transferred through subtle energy. Everything psychic is about subtle energy. Everything spiritual is about subtle energy. What's cool about chakras, these energy organs, is they're able to convert subtle energy into physical, or measurable, and physical into subtle. So it's these kind of mechanisms through which we could literally disappear a tumor, you know, if we change the conditions that we're holding in our system, you know, or that we can, you know, take something subtle, you know, and put it into words, or manifest with it, do something that resonates and vibrate something that is desirable into physical reality.
When you talk about subtle energy, does that include your personality?
I love that question. I think mainly, yes. I do believe that there's components of our personality, I want to say it this way, that just really are not our energy. They're learned behaviors. I see people interject others' energies all the time. Literally, Dad's voice becomes real inside of us. Or we take on an aspect of somebody else's soul, and we live that out, we act that out. You know, not only that's the basis of sometimes multiple personality disorder or some of these kind of issues, you know, but personality is a really broad term, you know, to talk about how we are in the world. There's sort of our true personality, and then there's our behavior and action personality, and the latter can sometimes be sort of a conglomerate of energies that aren't always ours. We may not even know that we're acting a certain way because it sounds kind of spooky, but when you talk about subtle energy, there's not really many boundaries unless we put them up or figure them out. You know, we could be living on an aspect of our mother, you know, or a sibling or an ancestor.
You were talking earlier in your works about how you can even change DNA.
Absolutely. There's fascinating studies about changing DNA.
Let's hope serial killers don't learn that technique, right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, there's some really cool research coming out of Russia. I mean, Russia's in the information business, right? So,
sure.
Why wouldn't they be figuring this out? You know, we've established in sort of the quantum reality already that DNA, and there's two basic types of DNA. There's the what they call coding DNA, you know, which tells the body and the cells what to do. Then 97% of your DNA is called epigenetic material. It's the sort of chemical soup with DNA, dead viruses, ancestors' memories, hyaluronic acid. It's this super interesting stuff upon which ancestors' memories, you know, are loaded into our system. So we carry everybody that's come before with us. And they're proving that DNA is sort of a what they call biophoton machine. Tiny, tiny, tiny units of light, you know, are coming off and picking up on what's going on in the environment, bringing information in, sending information out. And the DNA is actually sort of like a sound machine as well. They've actually shown that it's really you know, programmed with the equivalent of words and phrases and syntax and grammar. So certain tones or sounds emanated into both the epigenetics and the DNA seem to open up the DNA. There's these little wormholes.
Hold on for a second, Cindy. We're already at the break, but we're coming back for more. Okay, next hour we're going to open up the phone lines. Those of you into subtle energy, we'll take your questions with Cindy Dale. But we've got a few more things right now to go and talk with her about. How do people go about building their energy if they don't have it or they haven't developed it?
That's a great question. So everybody's got it. It's a matter of, as we talked about in our earlier time period, you know, are you losing it and or are you taking an energy that's not your own? So start with those lower energy centers that are the densest, that are the most physical. Get outside, walk barefoot, maybe not in Minnesota where I'm from, you know, kind of in the middle of the winter. You know, start building up your physical system. We're still physical beings. You know, we can't just like concentrate in our head and think that that's going to do everything to create, you know, every single level of health that we're seeking for. So start with physical. Move around, eat better. better, this or that, start dealing with your feelings, your emotions, you know, and then the tools that are most frequently taught in spiritual circles are going to make a difference. Then you can start doing deep breathing, meditating, chanting, singing, doing that which makes you happy, George, makes such an absolute difference, you know, or doing what you do in a state of happiness, you know, at least contentment or serenity. You know, a lot of this is really about self-control and management. And then go to the next level and start to perceive subtle energy. Ask yourself questions when you're grocery shopping. You know, close your eyes before you pick between the peaches and the kumquats, you know, and ask yourself, which is going to be most supportive of my system right now? See if you can smell the fruit. See if you can get a message, you know, that's going to indicate what's going to really work the best for you. See if you can get an image. Start using your faculties. They're not really going to develop unless you use them. So I tell people, for instance, who want to develop their subtle energy of sight, you know, clairvoyance or clairaudience of hearing, or really kind of sorting through the feelings that they're feeling, is ask yourself questions. Use these faculties. Give yourself little tests. See what happens when you open up and ask yourself, you know, different questions, or open up to what I would call your spiritual guidance, you know, for advice. So live in the subtle world. Live in the world as if it's subtle, and you're going to start to notice things, see things, feel things, dream things, you know, and the next step is starting to direct the energy. Kind of to be able to say, hey, you know, I'm going to steer my day this way. How do I do that? Get the feelings, the sense, the images, you know, that are going to help you do that.
I have noticed that people who are a little more upbeat and happier tend to have a better outlook on life.
They do. They have a better outlook. Frankly, people like them better, too.
I think so.
Right? You know, and there's studies like Institute of Heart Math in California, you know, that if somebody's holding those sort of more optimistic sensations, I call them versions of joy, serenity, appreciation, whatever it might be, you know, that really gives you that more up feeling, you are healthier. You have a better life. You've got more people. You could get yourself out of the dump sooner. You know, and it's interesting. There's actually quantum particles in the body. They're called phonons. They're sort of like tiny little sound bites that when you've got like a positive sound or thought or feeling or whatever it is, every time your heart beats or some kind of wave goes off in your body, it spreads those positive sounds through your system, into your organs, and your body's healthier. If you're thinking negative thoughts, or I hate to say it, but you're really letting in, you know, sort of people's downers, depression is sort of a communicable disease, you know, unless you let yourself stay separate from it, you know, the body gets less healthy. So it's really on us, like we're both inferring, I think, to say that you need to keep yourself in that upbeat attitude.
Sure.
While not being a robot, I mean, when you're sad, you're sad. So feel the sadness. If you're angry, you're angry. Figure out what it's about.
So now let's talk about psychic vampires. Yes. These are people who don't have energy, but they prey on other people to take the energy.
Yes. Yes.
Have you ever come across one?
I have a lot of psychic vampires. Not many left in my life anymore because, you know.
And some of them aren't bad people.
No, they're not. You know, they learned when they were young at some primal level when they were just itsy-bitsy kids, you know, that you know, they didn't get their needs met. It's really kind of simple. You know, they didn't get their needs met. You know, they didn't figure out how to produce their own energy. You know, they don't know how to sustain themselves. And if you're starving, what are you going to do? You're going to go steal food. And essentially, that's what they're doing, is taking their nourishment from other people. They don't have a sense in their soul how to get that from more of a divine origin. Wasn't given to them when they were little, you know. And so it's really literally like they have sort of suckers, you know, tentacles and suckers coming out of their subtle anatomy, the invisible anatomy that takes where they can take. And some of us are more vulnerable to that kind of person than others because we're givers. We have a lot of energy. Maybe we were raised in a system, or our soul is programmed with this, the belief systems or the abilities to give, to care, you know, to help, to heal, to provide. And so those kind of people tend to match up unless you break a pattern, whether you're on either side of the fence.
Can psychic vampires change?
Yes, they absolutely can.
How so?
Yes, but, you know, the challenge is they have to somehow get the message that they're taking from other people. And usually they don't like hearing that, whether it's from a friend or a therapist. I have a friend who isn't a friend anymore, so I can't call her a friend anymore, you know, that I was just exhausted every time I was around her, just completely exhausted. You know, and I said, you know, I feel drained and tired when I'm with you. I think there's something going on where you're taking energy and I'm giving it, and I want to change that pattern with you. Never heard from her again. You know, the other way that they can change, I have a relative who's very, very much a psychic vampire. In fact, when my youngest son is around her within 5 minutes, he wants to sleep and he has to go home if we've gone to visit her. If you stop giving energy to psychic vampires, you can't guarantee they're going to change, but you're encouraging them. You're not feeding their habit. And so it prompts some different behavior in them, at least at the subconscious level.
Have you ever found a case where the psychic vampire was so bad that the person that he preyed on got sick?
Yes, yes. In fact, you know, the Munchausen, you know, syndrome and some of these
yes.
different sorts of illnesses where, you know, like they typically call, you know, think of that as the, you know, the mother wants her children to be sick because then she in turn gets attention. That's kind of how it's psychologically
yeah.
defined.
Sick.
I don't think that's it at all. I think on the subtle energy level, what's happening when those kinds of conditions are occurring, you know, is literally that child or the loved one or whoever it is, you know, their energy, you know, is so vamped from them that they do become sick. I see it in my practice constantly and all the time. I remember years and years ago, a man who was a plumber gave me a call and he said, you know, I have this condition, these are major conditions, heart failure. He has something like 45, this and that and the other thing. And I said, well, where's your energy going? And immediately he said, my father. I spend a lot of time with my father. I work with my father. I said, how's your father feel? He goes, he's, you know, 85 and he's absolutely great, fit as a fiddle. I said, well, there's your energy. So, you know, you don't want to hurt the person when you pull your energy back from them, you know, but you need your energy back. So, you know, I usually use a process, I just call it healing streams of grace, you know, whereby you ask for the other to be provided what they need, you know, kind of, you know, without you being in the middle of it, and you get provided separately what you need, say from the source or spirit, you know, and then you need to be willing, if you're the person that's getting sick because you're being stolen from, to use your energy for yourself. You have to kind of usually get through more of a survivalistic programming that says, I won't be loved, I won't exist, I don't have a place in my world, in my family, if I'm not providing for other people. I had a man who had ALS, and, you know, he actually, his twin brother was diagnosed with ALS right before it seemingly disappeared from the twin brother and showed up in my client. And I firmly believe that my client subconsciously took on, you know, that illness in order to spare his brother, but then he had the illness. So we had to send that away, not to the twin brother, but deal with the, you know, kind of machinations, if you would, underneath it. So, you know, at many levels, everything I believe does boil down to subtle energy. Physical reality is based on the framework of what's happening in the subtle realm. So we need to ask ourselves questions like, what's my energy? You know, am I using my energy? Am I losing my energy? You know, am I giving away the energy that I need to be dealing with? I remember one time I was working with a client. My oldest son was downstairs, and this client had major problems going on. I mean, to be really honest, what was actually happening is her 8-year-old son was levitating off the floor with some sort of strange demonic possession. I felt sick to my stomach because I could feel the dark energy that was impacting them, help the person, help the son, clean the situation. soon as I got off the phone, my son downstairs started yelling, "Mommy, Mommy, I'm going to throw up." So through that interconnection, he was literally, through me, taking on some of that icky energy that was in, you know, the home of a client 1,000 miles away.
Jeez.
I know, it's pretty
It is weird.
It is weird. Subtle energy is weird. That's why they call it spooky. It's not stopped by time and distance. You know, it's not body-based. Your body emanates subtle energy. It picks up on subtle energy. You know, but some of the studies, they're Russian again, you know, kind of are insisting about 96% of reality is subtle. So I think we should have classes in high school on the nature of quantum physics and subtle energy and start to figure out that most of what is impacting us lies within this invisible realm. I like to tell a story of my youngest son one time. I was in therapy dealing with some really big issues, emotional issues. He's 8 at school, sitting in his desk. I get a call, you know, kind of when I'm done with my therapy sessions. My son has thrown out his back sitting in the desk at school. 8-year-olds don't throw out their back. They just don't do it. The energy I'd been releasing was in the same spot, the chakra, in my back as what, you know, the area that my son had thrown out. He had literally absorbed that from me, processed it for me, couldn't process it, and had a physical issue with it.
Cindy, as you look at the things that you have been working on all over the years, energy healing and spirituality, mm-hmm. how healthy can a person make themselves if they really tap into this?
Really healthy. And I don't think it's about perfection. I think somebody can eat chocolate cake once in a while.
Moderation.
Right? Yes, it's all about moderation. You know, there, even with diet, there's studies that show if you're having a good time while you're eating your chocolate cake, guess what? It's not going to have the damage as if you're in a depressed mood. It's moderation. It's staying in tune with what's best for you in the moment. And, you know, I think you can be very healthy. You know, I probably haven't had much more than a cold every so often for years and years and years. Of course, I do energy work.
Is that attitude?
It's attitude, absolutely. It's attitude. It's dealing with things as they come up. You know, I think it's being willing to be honest. Like, if I'm in a lousy mood, I'm not going to go pretend I'm not, right? I'm actually going to go, okay, Cindy, what's up? What are you doing? Shift this yourself. Get to what's going on. You know, and I, you know what? More than anything, I think it's about loving life. I kind of have these two camps of people. Everybody has two camps of people, right? Whatever your labels are. You know, you're either going to really love it, even though it's kind of a hard knock place, this world is, you know, or you're just going to be sort of miserable and feeling sorry for yourself. I think we can have compassion for ourselves and other people, but pity, you know, nobody's handed anything over their lifetime that much harder, you know, than anyone else, at least not in the Western, you know, world, not in America at any rate, you know, right now. So I think it is a lot about attitude. It's about self-responsibility. I love learning about the subtle universe because it gives everybody tools. Everybody's on an even playing field. We're not always on an even playing field in the physical world. Some of us are born with more money or less money, right? More challenged genital issues than not. The subtle energy, it's available to all of us.
When people tap into this, is that what they're doing, first of all, or are they tapping into themselves?
You know, I think it's both, to be honest. I mean, when we look at the highest of the approaches to spirituality or religion, they all talk about oneness. They talk about unity, oneness, interconnectivity. And so I think you can simultaneously tap into yourself, like your true self, you know, and kind of the greater whole at the same time. I have a good friend. His father died. He was in a car down in Phoenix, and he'd never had a psychic experience in his whole life. He heard his dad's voice. And this friend, you know, kind of came to see me with his wife and a friend of mine, and we thought, you know, can we tap into his father? Can we tap into God? You know, can we get a sense of the greater, you know, kind of path or plan afterwards. A couple really interesting things happened when we were together. First of all, we could all see and feel his father show up, not with our eyes, you know, kind of in the inner mind screen. And his dad was saying, look, I'm not a unique soul anymore. I am and I'm not. And we all had the feeling of more, like an inner connection. The next thing that happened is my friend Mark held out his hands. It was dark. We were kind of playing seance. It was sort of cool, like what you do when you're a kid, right?
Okay. No Ouija boards.
No, we didn't do that. You don't need a Ouija board, just yourself. And he said, my dad's going to give me something. Mark held out his hands. Literally, I could see a gold bowl, just a gold bowl. So could Mark. His wife saw this sort of white light. Mark moved his hands. The gold bowl was still suspended. There's so much more than we know, and it's all available. Whatever it is we call it, it's through this interconnectivity. I kind of like to think that there's this sort of diamond matrix that's interconnected just around what's good, what's right, what's destined. You know,
it's the wireless internet of life.
It's like a wireless internet, exactly. But it's sort of the destiny. It's the good stuff. Then we're really trying to reconnect with it and get that.
We're gonna take calls with you in just a moment, Cindy. Let's take this quick break. Stories, questions, experiences with you next.